Hello and welcome to Zero Hour with our hosts Hugh Joyce and Tim Bowring. Today's show is an ongoing series that explores Hanover and the surrounding Metro Richmond area's thriving art scene and the people that make it happen. Every Wednesday at 12:30, we sit down with one of these folks. The conversation is lively and spontaneous, so pull up a chair and meet some fascinating people. Today, we are talking with Arnold Kemp. Arnold, welcome to Zero Hour.
Hello.
We were talking about a myriad of things before we started recording, but I think probably the biggest thing is welcome to Richmond.
Thank you.
How long have you been here?
Since June last year, or July, maybe.
Yeah, so it's not quite
by,
a year yet.
It's flown by, not a year yet.
Yeah, okay.
It's flown by.
And you were, your last place of residence was?
Portland, Oregon.
So it's Portland, Oregon.
So I'm far away.
Oh, okay, so.
But he's from Boston.
From Boston.
Mm-hmm. By way of?
I was from Boston, and then I was from San Francisco, and then I was from New York, then Portland, and now Richmond.
And now he's from RVA.
This yeah. So,
all right. And then to just.
Is it RVA or RIC?
I go with RIC, but they're interchangeable. They're totally interchangeable. RIC is fine. RVA, whatever you like.
Okay.
And just to sort of let you folks know some of the accomplishments of Arnold, his work resides in the collections of the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the Studio Museum in Harlem, the Berkeley Art Museum, the Tacoma Art Museum, the Fine Arts Collection at the University of California, Davis, and the Schneider Museum of Art, Ashland, Oregon. And I could go on, but I won't. Obviously,
but you have to tell them I got a Guggenheim.
Ah, right? The Guggenheim. Yes. Yes. Okay.
And the Pollitt Krasner. And
yeah,
the Joe
no,
Mitchell.
You're right. He's, okay. Yes. That's very good.
Bottom line, this is a high-end operation.
Yeah. Of awards and fellowships from the John Simon Guggenheim Foundation. Is that the same Guggenheim?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
It's not Peggy. Peggy doesn't give you money. She'd give you a show.
So Guggenheim, for those of you who don't know, is pretty prestigious. And Pollitt Krasner is also a very prestigious award. Oh, gosh. And Joan Mitchell Foundation. This is on and on and on.
I mean,
on.
There's a reason I'm the chair of painting
really?
And printmaking. Yeah.
And I think that is a very important point to make. Arnold is the chair.
Well, I've done this intro pretty well, huh?
At BC. You.
Well, maybe we should start again. So, Arnold.
I think
you've been here for almost a year. Mm-hmm. And coming from Portland, Oregon, I guess the simplest way to put that is, how's that been for you?
Not that bad. Yesterday's weather was a lot like Portland's weather. There's a farmer's market near my house in Oregon Hill, which is very Portland.
You came here. And when you and I talked once, I think it was at my house, you said, yes, I have a lot of ideas. I have a lot of changes I want to make.
Did I say that?
You did.
Oh, sometimes
you take it all back now?
No, I don't take it all back. But I did say when I first got here that I wouldn't make any changes right away, that
right.
I would really look around and see what was going on. And now that I have, there are some things I want to change. And, I hope Joe Siples, my boss, is listening, because, interested
Tell
in.
Us about some of the biggest changes that you – I'm just curious. If you can,
well,
it's not a secret.
The name of our department is painting and printmaking, and that's the first thing I want to change. Actually, we've been talking about it even before I got here. Our printmaking faculty is like, should we call it painting and print media, or should we call it painting and printing, or – And I don't like the idea of calling it painting and print media because it sounds like it's about magazines.
Yeah,
and
I can't call it
painting and print because then I think that mm-hmm. sounds like we're talking about the study of typefaces. Mm-hmm. But I think calling it painting and printing might really open up some ideas about what we're doing when we're teaching people to make objects that are additioned, you know, lithography, etching, digital printing, monotypes, monoprints. So we think maybe we'll get rid of the name printmaking, which is really
a
19th century ideas. And
it is kind of a painter or a printmaker.
I do, my work is sort of a lot of things. I like to say I do everything except jewelry making. But I do make shoes.
Oh, there's still time, you know.
I do make shoes as my art.
Really?
Which actually is...
Talk about your shoes.
You make shoes?
Well, a few years ago, I decided, you know, my work can be very conceptual, kind of a little cold looking, I guess. Like, I make black paintings. They're really beautiful, but people might not really understand those. So I decided I wanted to do some work where people could really see my hand and actually relate to older works of mine, which are a lot of drawings.
See your hand.
I studied with a gentleman from Romania.
What do you mean by see my hand?
To see, you know, craft.
Mm-hmm.
To see that, you know, okay. I can do something besides make a monochromatic painting.
Mm-hmm.
Got really excited about it. And it relates to my past. My grandfather was a shoemaker, and my father's father made men's suits. So I went out and I found a gentleman whose family has been making shoes for 300 years or 200 years from Romania, who taught me very traditional forms of shoemaking with no machines, all very natural materials.
So painting, printmaking, and shoemaking would
well, for me, the shoemaking sculpture. Yeah, so it ends up in my work, and it got me the Guggenheim and other things. So, people, I believe in it.
do you use them as... at the end of the day?
No,
are
I don't
they,
wear
are
them.
They, you don't, no, no.
I knew you were going to ask me that. No, yeah, they're sculpture, really.
Okay.
So they're not to be worn, but more to present the ideas and concepts of how they used to be made.
Sure, and how they used to be made and their relationship to my past, my family, who are mm-hmm. people who've always made things with mm-hmm. their hands, or people who have always studied, read books, and wanted to be learn mm-hmm. things. Mm-hmm. You know, it was really great for me after making work for 20 years to decide to learn something new. And I was thinking,
what kind of work were you making? Were you making that minimal?
Painting, conceptual. Very minimal work, conceptual work.
It's nice. I'm looking at it. And you've got a website, right?
I do.
Looking, that's why I was looking at this little.
So you're curious. Trying to see it. I should send you a link.
I was so curious. But tell everybody
your website. www.a-j-kemp.com. You'll see the shoes there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, but anyway, after 20 years of making conceptual
art, I wanted to learn something new. And mm-hmm. I think that also came from working at an art school in Portland, Oregon for 4 years and thinking about how could the school continue to grow? How can faculty continue to grow? And I had said to my boss, the president of the school, I said, if I were the president of the school, I would ask every faculty in the summer to take a class. And to then come back.
I was going
to
ask you about
on what they
the confluence of being an administrator mm-hmm. And being an artist,
mm-hmm.
and you kind of just alluded to that.
Mm-hmm.
But talk about that a little bit. They seem to impact each other.
Well, being an administrator is different from being a teacher. Mm-hmm. I feel like I love to teach, and that feeds my artwork. I'm not sure that the administrative stuff does, but I'm a thinker, and I like to think about systems, and I like to mm-hmm. create systems that really work and are efficient so that then I can get back to making my work.
Right.
That's really the most important thing.
Are systems important in your work too?
Yes, there can be rules. There can be things like, oh, you know, let's make these shoes and I have to make them. I can't pay someone else to make them, and I have to study and I have to use no machines. And I have to use natural materials, and they should be leather, and you know, then they have to be kind of plain. They have to look like a pair of shoes that, you know, a well-dressed man might wear, you know.
So
there are some rules.
So coming here to a southern town, it certainly has evolved quite a bit over the last 25 or 30 years. What have you found to be most challenging in terms of being an administrator?
Well, it's about team building and meeting mm-hmm. the people that you want to be on your team. Mm-hmm. And it's not hard to meet people, you know, in my job. But I think the challenge is bringing new ideas to people who've been here for a while.
Yeah.
And they also don't know me yet. And, you know, they want to, I guess, you know, feel that they have to trust. And some people are less trusting than others.
Yeah.
And some people are less team players than others. And some people are great team players. I mean, I can name some really great team players here if you'd like me to.
No, I probably know.
Let's don't drop any names.
I've met some really great people here. A bunch of people at a gathering and forget some of their names.
Circling on, I was looking at some of your work, in mm-hmm. on Google there real fast while we were talking. And some of those paintings, and they look dimensional to me from this photograph, the black and white ones with, looks like, you know, the little round, are they dimensional, or is there anything rising up off that canvas?
Oh, yeah. You know, some of those, it's black? Really interesting. I, you know, talk about rules. I, at one point, decided I wouldn't make any paintings like those anymore. And I know what you're talking about. They're these really, actually, they're kind of beautiful and very funny black paintings that are made with black glitter and doll's eyes. So,
I couldn't tell that's what it was.
They're little plastic doll's eyes. And they are, you know, really interesting paintings because they use sort of, you know, craft store materials instead of oil paint. They're really kind of hand-built. You know, when I started making those, I was living in San Francisco in the Haight-Ashbury. And, you know, I'm like, well, I could just walk down to Haight Street and get all my materials there. And it's all like tie-dye and pipe cleaners and glitter and black glitter and doll's eyes. And then I moved to New York, and it's really hard to get black glitter in New York. I had to start ordering it from the manufacturer because they would only sell black glitter at Halloween time in New York. When right. I lived in San Francisco, I could always get it. So right. At one point...
You may have just captured the difference between San Francisco and New York.
Although that work had a following, I realized that those paintings made people think about some other artists. And I decided I didn't want my work to make people think of other artists. I decided my work should just make people think about me. I started to make the shoes.
That's a beautiful statement. It's really so interesting.
It's really quite simple.
Yeah. Don't we all? We want people to think about us, not some other person when they're looking at us.
Yeah.
So right now, the focus of your work, your artistic work, is doing the shoes. Mm-hmm. What else are you doing?
I'm also doing these really large, I guess, prints, I could call them, that are based on the human face and masks. And in fact, they're sort of related to, I think, ideas about African masks, which relate to my own, you know, my own identity as a black person in the United States. And my early work was really a lot of drawings of African sculpture. And I was thinking about relationships to Matisse and Picasso and mm-hmm. some other artists. But the new work I'm making, it's related to photography, it's related to drawing, it's kind of a mix of a lot of things.
Is that displayed anywhere now, or is it tucked in a secret studio somewhere?
I have a secret studio in Portland, and I can't tell you where it is. No, I have a lot of work here. My gallery in Portland, Oregon has a lot of that work.
You can certainly mention your gallery for the folks listening in, if that's
sure. I have a great gallery in Portland that's called PDX Contemporary. And a lot of my work has sold recently to a young collector in New York City. Mm-hmm. I don't think, I've shown that work in New York, but no museums have those works. The works that you talked about that are in museums are paintings and drawings right now. The process, Art Commission just bought some work as well.
The process that you're going through now, because you made reference to a number of different materials, can you talk about that in terms of photography and
You know, I went to an art school where you didn't have to declare a major. Mm-hmm. And so when I say that thing like, oh, I do everything but jewelry making, because at my art school, which was the museum school in Boston, I basically did do almost everything. And in fact, I learned the most about being an artist from doing performance art.
Really?
That is something that I love to do. And wow. Right now I'm teaching a course at VCU that's an amazing combination of drawing and dance mm-hmm. and poetry. So I'm teaching this course with the chair of the dance department, Lee mm-hmm. Marshall, and another dancer named Judith Steele, who's been around for a long time. But Lee is also a poet. Mm-hmm. So we have students in that class from the sculpture department, from painting and printmaking, from photography, from the English department, from the creative writing department. We have grad students, we have undergrads, 25 students in that course. And we're doing some amazing thing.
Anybody from painting?
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, there's got to be some amazing things coming from that.
Talk about, you know, the average
The
class.
Average class.
I mean, there
well,
is no average class
about
here.
With that, because we're having them collaborate. We're having them do some interesting things. But I was really happy, and you know, we tried to teach in sections. So there was an intensive part about movement, and then there was an intensive part about drawing, mark making, and making images, and then there was an intensive part about writing, because we thought about, well, the arts and their origins, and we're like, oh, they must have started first with movement, and then we start, people start drawing pictures, and then they started writing. So that's the way we taught the course. And in my drawing course,
that's
one day,
hypothesis.
I have them think about, you know, how their bodies and breathing into different parts of their bodies first. And then I thought about, had them think about different ways of drawing and connecting their brain to how they're seeing and how they're moving. So I had them draw their left hand with their right hand. Mm-hmm. And then I had them draw an image of their right hand using their left hand. Most people use one hand or the other. One student in that class realized for the first time in his life that he was ambidextrous and kind of freaked out and really couldn't talk about it. So then after I had them do that and we talked about those drawings, which were fairly interesting, I said, now I want you to draw your left foot with your right foot. And they were literally, the students were on the floor with charcoal pens and Sharpie markers between their toes, drawing amazing images, using their power of observations and their power of dexterity, but with their feet to draw. And then after they drew their left foot with their right foot, I had them draw their right foot with their left foot.
So to you, this makes sense. To the listener, it might sound like, why would he ask them to make that kind of mess?
Here you go.
So talk about that.
Ask me sometimes what I teach, and I love to teach drawing. Mm-hmm. And one of the first things I ever say in a drawing class is, when you were a little kid, you just drew. You just drew and you didn't judge yourself. And then one day you looked at Sally's drawings next to you and like, oh my God, Sally, she makes better drawings than I do. And so you got anxious and you stopped drawing. Mm-hmm. And so in that course, I really got everyone to let go of their ideas of what they thought skill was with drawing, so that they could really engage with powers of observation. Mm-hmm. And not to say that I got them to be little kids again, because I'm not really interested in art that goes that way. But I got them to let go of their, I got them to be more creative, because they had to let go of their powers of judging it as good or bad.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything published?
A lot published. But I feel all this is supposed to be about me. I'm actually a kind of a shy person, and I don't want to just be on the radio blowing.
Is it on Amazon? Well, we want you to blow your head. Let me tell you something. If you don't blow it, no one else will. So
I know,
let her
that's
rip.
That's what my cousin told me.
Let her go.
And don't worry.
Are you on Amazon?
As a poet, there are certain limits that.
More of my work is published in individual journals than one book. Okay. But I am working on a book right now.
You should do a book.
And a lot of the writing I'm doing,
poems. Okay.
I've been using my phone to write my poems on.
Really?
And my great new friend, C.A. Conrad, who's a great poet in Philadelphia, called them phonemes instead of poems. And phonemes. I'm super excited about my book. There's the name of your book.
Phonemes.
It's all about, for me, being open and being free. And this is, I know, I think Tim will appreciate this because I've been to your house. And you love music. You have a great jazz collection.
That was my next question. Tell me about music.
And like, that's, you know, that jazz is with the improvisation, with the freedom, that is a big influence for me. Oh, punk rock music is too, but jazz in particular. I've sung in several bands. The last band I was in was called Ghost Mom. And one day they asked me to be the singer. We sang for a long time together. And then one day I never asked, why is this band called Ghost Mom? And my bandmates looked at me and said, didn't you know? Like, all of our mothers are white.
Oh my God.
Because that band was incredible. It was like two African-American people, two Mexican people, and a woman from Tunisia. And we were all biracial people, all with white
moms. Biracial.
So the name of the band
is
Ghost Mom.
That's great.
It's great, great punk.
It's like a band I know that.
Post-punk band.
was it called? 36 fingers? Because one of the guys had a finger missing. I'm not doing the math very great. Fast, but yeah, but anyway. So, well,
so yeah, I've had many lives and just trying to be creative.
So interesting. And it's exciting to have someone with your capabilities and energy. I love your energy, by the way.
Why did you ask me about writing? Should I be writing?
I think, oh, you definitely should be writing. Like, we could just think that you've got all this creative energy, and I guess Tim's sense of smell and my sense of smell too was that you could probably write. So.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not shocked that you're a writer and a poet and you've done plays and things like that.
But any short poems?
Yeah, can you do a poem for us that on memory?
And if not a poem, how about
get the phone? Yeah, he's got him on his phone.
I could read.
How about a performance piece on the radio?
There you go. Tim, this is good. This is going to be one of our best interviews ever, I can tell.
This piece is called Knock Knock. So, knock knock.
Who's there?
TV.
TV who?
There's nobody there. Nothing is there. It's humbling. The television patterns flicker like an Agnes Martin painting. It's in Canada and Nova Scotia. A likeness, if forever. Love broadly flattened in a gray that a fly couldn't buzz on, couldn't land on. He will buzz pretending to be a bee, but it's blackmail and anxious and coated in black and shine. It kills my father if it shines. This fabulous world without a face, without a body. Then who is it? FDA, AZT, Cinderella? Seriously, theater, bringing it to the streets, the black part of the parade, the black, the pink, the black babies take a part of the inside of you. That's who, asshole, and don't you forget it.
Wow.
Is that recent?
It's a phoneme, yeah, it's very recent. This one, what is it called? Well, I don't remember what it's called, but damn poets, dream poems, pick any word, systematically eliminate, systematically derange, rewrite, get a group of words, never listen to poets, practice early, set up multiple choices, eliminate material, use phrases, experiment, take an idea, construct a poem, cut up, write, tape, note, get a friend to write, use, pretend, take, type, make, take, experiment, attempt, consider, write, tape record, write, attempt, use, experiment, use, dream, work, work. Yeah, that's good. My poem for all the poets.
Yes, that's a good one. Well,
cool.
We're about out of time.
Well, so. We're going to have to get you back. We're going to have to get Arnold back for another interview because this.
I think he has more than one topic to talk about.
I think we've got more than one interview out of our new friend here in Richmond. So.
I'm not logical like Sonia. She's amazing.
Yeah, she
is.
Sure,
her interview
was
just like a laser.
She's very laser.
Sonia. You know, I mean, you know, she is what she is.
Well, this has been really great.
This was charming.
Meeting you in.
Yeah. Yeah, the interesting thing is that you've managed to maintain that freedom, and also it's not just completely out of control, and we're not, you know.
Well, yeah, he's running a department, so you know it's really
right. Exactly.
Cool
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's you know it's.
I don't know how
it's
the
open,
heck you, I don't know how you did it,
but it's in the road.
Well, you were asking me about this administrative thing and how do I keep this thing you're inside of me that you can't see, but I try to express how do I keep that alive while you know keeping. Managing the budget and everything. And I think that's one of the reasons VCU hired me. They, you know, I've been doing it for over 20 years. I was a curator at a big institution in San Francisco for 10 years. At the same time, I had 5 solo shows of my work.
Right.
And started showing
so,
my work.
So, yeah. So just,
And you kind of summed it up in your poem, you work.
Work.
You know, you work. And that's what, you know, makes anyone successful. You work.
Yeah.
You're working. Which is cool.
Yeah, is that interesting balance?
Yeah,
it really is, and I see it in the work that I do because I work with with nonprofits, so that's a form of an organization and certain structure. But it also, in order for it not to die, has to be, has to have a heart. So thank you, folks, for listening. We hope to see you on the radio again next Wednesday at 12:30. This is Hugh Joyce and Tim Bowring. Hoping you have a great week. You are listening to WHAN 1430 AM and 102.9 FM. And thank you, Arnold Kemp.
Thank you
for coming.
Thanks a lot. Have a great day.